And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this Wednesday, February 26, 1:06 in the afternoon. Temperatures outside are pretty darn nice across parts of the area. We've reached 41 here at the studio, but in the far northern valley in northern Minnesota, where kind of socked in cloud cover, temperatures there only right around 30, so a good 10 degrees difference from north to south this afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, are you ready for spring? Is this it? No more snow for the rest of the winter, right? This is it. Spring's here.
Well, I think we might be a little far-fetched on that, because I've listened closely enough where you've told me that that will be the case. We're going to have a little bit more winter mid-month as we get into March. But frankly, this is a nice respite from what we've had. A lot of melting going on. The car washes are all very busy. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of situation where farmers are dragging equipment out of barns, out of sheds, into the shop. If we haven't been working on it, it's time to start. So it's that initial kickoff to spring season.
It is. I call this fall spring.
It is.
Because we all know that we still have the month of March and heck, even April to get through. So, in fact, I am updating. You saw the weather officers. Papers all over the place, updating the new LRC calendar, and should have that done this weekend. We'll put that online this weekend for March. I redid the March calendar, and then we have April and May all set as well. We'll let you know when our last freeze is expected, when our last frost may be, and any storms that are in the offing. I'll tell you what, March is going to come in like a lamb as we start this weekend. But it's going to start roaring after about the 10th of the month, it looks like.
So do you want to start taking bets on last frost?
Ooh, last frost or freeze?
Well, we could do both, to be honest, but probably last freeze now that you say it.
Okay.
But we're going to need some parameters. We can't just start that willy-nilly. We're going to have to figure out exactly what we're saying, what we're asking for, how we want people to deliver their guesses to us. So, yeah, we could probably start something like that.
Okay.
I mean, we still have a rain gauge or two around.
We do.
So this could be a great way to get people thinking about spring with their rain gauges.
Yeah. Should we reveal when the LRC has the last freeze?
It's definitely going to show who's paying attention.
Okay.
Some of you already have your pens and pencils out.
Right. No doubt. Well, I'll tell you what. There's no freeze or no hard freeze in the forecast as we head into the next couple of days. Now, the nights will get just below freezing, but all in all, we've got a pretty decent-looking forecast, at least for the next day and a half to 2 days before the bottom starts to fall out briefly. So the rest of today, we're looking at a nice day with mild conditions, highs right around 45. Again, much cooler in the far northern valley into northern Minnesota with a northwest wind about 5 to 15. Partly cloudy tonight, lows into the upper 20s with a northwest wind 5 to 10. And Thursday, winds turn to the west 5 to 10 and highs in the low to mid 40s again on Thursday. Looking pretty good. Now, Thursday night, the winds ramp up out of the southwest 15 to 30. That will keep our overnight lows into the mid, about the mid 30s on Thursday night. Now, Friday morning, a strong cold front hits and our morning high will be our overnight low Thursday night, because we're going to see falling temperatures throughout the day on Friday into the 20s. And winds will be northwest 20 to 40 and gusting up to 45 on Friday afternoon. Temperatures Friday night will have sub-zero wind chills once again and windy conditions. And then Saturday, high pressure builds in, but cool high pressure only in the 20s for highs on Saturday. We rebound into the 40s. Or the low 40s on Sunday, and then Monday, we should be pretty darn close to the upper 40s. And then reality sets in later next week. We cool back down into the 30s, and a chance for a little light snow as we head into, it looks like Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, as a storm system passes to our south. We'll be right on the northern end of that. According to the LRC, there's going to be about three to four storms possible during the month of March, only two of those being relatively, at least the potential of relatively strong, while the other two should be rather weak. So, again, we're going to turn stormier in March. That's usually expected for this time of the year as we battle winter and spring, and we're usually right in the middle of that battleground. So, like I said, we're not quite done with the snowfall yet, but once we turn that corner into April, things will change.
And we'll look forward to some April showers, which I did see some folks experience just a little bit of rain late yesterday. There was that happening in just a couple of small places.
Yeah, a few sprinkles yesterday.
So I think most of that was probably right along the North Dakota-South Dakota border from the looks of it.
Yeah, kind of like the last system, too, that passed that way as well. But we could use, I mean, if we're going to get any heavy rain, boy, let's get this ground thawed out a little bit more so we can soak that in.
You folks down on the border get all the action. That's right. Where it's constantly raining. All right, this weather update is sponsored by Ryan Bontak. He is with Equitable AgriFinance, and he is providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. Give him a shout if you are a local farmer or rancher and you want to talk about those fixed rates for financing. He is here to help. You can reach Ryan at 701-261-6529. I give him my seal of endorsement. I've known Ryan for a long time and does business with him in the past. So certainly someone worthwhile that you want to visit with. So keep him in mind. Many things to keep in mind as we start looking at our discussion earlier this week. We talked about bee rustling and honeybees and how there is more of a colony collapse disorder, and this is happening in California. Work is also being done in Montana, and it's funded by the National Science Foundation to try to figure out what could be causing some viral concerns within honeybees. They're investigating defense mechanisms with the strategy of reducing honeybee colony deaths. And they're doing a number of different things. First of all, honeybees can be infected with mites in the hives. That's going to damage them. That's going to carry disease. There can be exposure to other pathogens, viruses, and other losses. And right now, beekeepers, particularly in Montana, are trying to maintain over 250,000 honeybee colonies for production and crop pollination. So they have a vested interest. We certainly do here in the state of North Dakota as well. Many of the viruses that affect honeybees have observable symptoms for which they're named. There's something called the deformed wing virus. Now, scientists have also learned that not every virus-infected bee exhibits symptoms, similar to what happens in illness in people.
They might be carriers,
right, but not infected. So with the impact of that, one of the ways that they're doing some of this research is bees infected with viruses don't fly as far as healthy bees. So they're figuring out who's sick, what that symptomology might look like, and how they can help. So these reduced flight distances really reduce the ability of those forager bees to get nectar and pollen, and it really impacts that community of roughly 30,000 bees, or they could be carrying something that would infect the entire hive. And it's kind of cute. I know this is going to sound funny. Folks are like, we're studying this. But they are doing something to figure out what the flight path is and the distance that they're going, and they're using what they call flight mills. These are machines to which an individual bee is attached by a leash, and it measures their flight distance and speed. There's a lot of work around honeybees. Not that long ago, we talked about the fact that for bees, you can actually, there's a robot bee that's being developed as well. And so when we have these colony collapses, you would have a backup plan, if you will, with a substitute little robot that could fly and do the work of honeybees. So there's all sorts of stuff going on in honey production these days that you just don't think about.
That's wild.
That is wild.
A bee on a leash.
Yeah. Who puts the leash on? How tiny is it? I just envision these tiny little lariats that have to go around their necks. And I bet the bee doesn't like that. You know, it's like your dog probably doesn't appreciate a leash. I bet the bee didn't either.
Oh, man.
Problem is, your dog barks, the bee bites.
Right.
Well, stings.
Exactly. Well, hey, we have Trucker Al on line one. He's got a question either for me or you, Bridget.
Okay.
Al, how's it going today?
Good. So with pretty much all the snow gone on the fields, what's the frost level at? Is it starting to melt a little bit, or is it still pretty deep?
So this is where I'm going to take the guess. I'm going to say it's probably still fairly deep. I can go to Endon sites and start looking at frost depth, because a number of those sites have probes where we can give that depth. Daryl Richardson, state climatologist, would have all of that.
I saw about 30 to 34 inches for Fargo when I looked a few days ago. That was before this warm spell, but I don't think it's penetrated too far. So I saw 34
inches?
Inches down in that it was at frozen at 30 to 32 degrees.
Okay.
So that very good voice wisdom and reason is Don Kinsler, who's going to be joining us here for the day.
So a good over 2 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Over two feet.
I'm not surprised at that.
Okay.
That would be the right timing this year.
Yeah, and I got it from the Endon chart is where I got it. And that considers soil frozen if it's below 32 degrees.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And we haven't had a lot of snow cover, so that makes sense.
Right. Does that help, Al?
Okay. Yeah, I did. And I won't be getting in the garden anytime soon. They're making...
No. No. Not quite yet. But I like your enthusiasm.
Oh, there you go. Okay, now,
Al, you hold that thought because when Don joins us here after we take a market break with the American Egg Network, we are going to talk about potential gardening scams. And even though you're excited about getting to the field or getting to the garden field for some, there might be some lookouts that we should be watching for that could go bad. We even have pictures that'll be in the live stream and the whole nine yards. So there's a lot going on today when Don joins us. Again, the voice of wisdom.
I got to make you some more salsa.
Oh, please do.
Well, wait, this isn't an internet scam, is it, Al? So
No.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate your phone call. We've got break coming up right now, but when we come back, we'll have the wonderful Don Kinsler on air with us. If you have any questions for Don, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. Again, that's 701-293-9000. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And maybe you heard one of the ads that was playing, and that was for Kerr Auction. Don't forget to check them out. They have a sale at Adrian, Minnesota that's coming up, and it closes next week. So you're going to want to check out that lineup of equipment, and you can find them, Kerr, K-E-R-R, equipment.com. Now, as we said earlier, the voice of wisdom and knowledge is sitting right here in studio with us, Don Kinsler. How are you?
I'm great. I don't know about wisdom and knowledge, but it's great to be here. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for inviting me.
I told Bonnie Amistadi this morning, if you were to ever retire, we would need a USB port behind your ear to download all the information you have to the rest of us.
I don't know about that, but I have no plans to retire anytime soon.
Oh, good.
I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy being with you guys too much to retire.
Oh, no, this is a lot of fun. We need you here. Okay. Let's start out with what we were talking about with Trucker Al, and that is scams. And we even have a photo that you sent me, and I think Addison can put that in the live stream for folks who are watching. Do you want to start to describe this for us so we can pick it apart?
I got an email from someone about a week ago, and they sent me a photo of a hosta and asked if would this hosta in this photo, would this be adapted in our area? And part two of the question was, can we grow hosta from seed? Okay, and the hosta, the picture that she showed, a red, vibrant red hosta. Vibrant red. The entire leaf was red on the photo that she sent me. And so I thought, oh my gosh, is this real? Have the breeders developed a red hosta? And, of course, many gardeners and people in their yards and landscapes are familiar with hosta. It does beautifully in the shade. It can be green. It can be green and white, variegated. There are some bluish tones. But I've never seen a bright red hosta. And so I thought, well, have breeders broken through? And so when I started checking, and then I'm seeing all kinds of photos. One is a hosta that is red, white, and blue, bright red.
I just sent that to our producer. I just saw that on Amazon, too.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden I see, no, breeders haven't developed this. It's artificial intelligence, AI, and the photo was created only in someone's mind. And so then I started, as I was looking farther, I see them being... seeds of these colorful hosta being sold online on the most popular online buying site, 100 seeds for about $12.
Right.
And hosta can be grown from seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that is true. But a person planting those seeds is not going to get a red, white, and blue-leaved hosta.
No.
That's just, again, it's imagination in someone's mind. It's upsetting because I feel sorry for the people that buy those 100 seeds. I looked at some of the reviews down on the, you know, where you can review
the product.
And I saw people that they're excited. I can't wait until this grows.
Oh.
I can't wait. I'm going to love this bright hosta.
No.
Now there's some red, white, and blue. There's another one that I brought a picture of, white variegation, but the outer leaf variegation is bright red. Mm-hmm. But the other interesting thing I noticed on that hosta is the flowers, and hostas do flower.
Yes.
They've got a nice blossom. But these flowers are not hosta flowers. they're totally not. They're from some other plant. So, again, I feel sorry for people that bought these 100. You may as well, Jack and the Beanstalk bought his seeds. And so I feel sorry for these. I did look at a few more reviews to see did anybody actually get seeds to germinate and what came. And someone said, well, when the seedlings came up, they sure aren't like in the photo.
Oh, I bet
and
not.
And chances are they're probably going to be a green hosta or something like that. And so, you know, artificially intelligent AI-generated photos, I mean, I've seen some of these on Facebook. Uh-huh. I saw an iris that was just a beautiful, beautiful color, kind of iridescent. And then I noticed that those iris flowers were on top of daffodil leaves.
Oh.
And I thought, well, my gosh, I've been duped. I mean, I didn't buy it, but right. I thought, well, this is artificial. And I looked down on some of the posts, and some people were saying, oh, this is awesome, beautiful. And then somewhere farther down, a gardener said, would you people stop with this AI photos that are just make-believe? And so it's interesting, but it's a little upsetting at how a person could be tricked.
It is.
So buyer beware if you're buying this on Amazon or any other site that there's no such thing as a red, white, and blue hosta, red and white hosta. It's just your green.
You know, that red, white, and blue, that would make a flag blush. It was so bright.
I saw it. It's beautiful. But how do legally they get away with that? I mean,
I don't know.
Here's the thing. How any of these sites, Amazon, anybody else, how much are they vetting what's being sold on there? They're not. Now, reputable sites, let's say Gurney's, Jung's, Territorial Seed Company, your local folks, they are doing the right thing and they're making sure it's credible. This is not that different than when we have local large box stores. And I don't, it's going to sound terrible, but I'm sorry, Lowe's and Home Depot, they have product that gets shipped up here and whoever is sending it within their corporate system is not looking at our zones. And there are plants that get sold up here. They are not suited for our zones. They die in our winter months. And then folks are disappointed because it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But that's where we have to be smart enough as the buyer.
You are right. And in fact, in our Saturday Garden column, in the Saturday Forum, I address this and I indicate how can you tell, what are some ways that you can tell actually, if some of this is AI make-believe. And, of course, education is one of the main things. Look for plant names. Look for a botanic name somewhere down in fine print. Look for a cultivar name. Now, when I look at this beautiful red and white hosta, there's no cultivar name on it. And, you know, it doesn't actually say that the seeds that you buy are going to turn into that photo. You know, it doesn't actually say that, I don't believe. It's interesting, the red, white, and blue-leaved hosta, it described it as a rare hosta. And, yeah, very rare.
Very rare.
Hasn't been created yet. So anyway, AI can do so much, but this is one instance where it's maybe not doing what
so
we intended.
Buyer beware. Buy local. Buy local.
Yes, and our local garden centers, and like you indicated, Bridge, you know, a reliable mail order catalog. You know, some of the photos that they share maybe aren't going to be, unbelievably colored, but that's okay. You know, I'd rather have a real photo that maybe isn't quite as flashy as one that was created.
Yeah.
And you don't want that disappointment. You overpaid for something that didn't grow to what you wanted it to be, died because it was the wrong zone. I mean, we have to be smart enough. Like you said, when you shared that picture of the hosta with me, the white flowers with the red edging on that, on the vegetation, I knew those were not hosta flowers. They don't look like mine.
Yeah, our growing season is precious. We love our gardening and our yards. You know, we want to get out in them. We don't want to waste time on something that was made up. You know, we're serious about this and serious about enjoying it.
No doubt. Well, now, Don, it's been this winter compared to last year. It's a colder winter this year. We've had a little bit more snow, but we're still well behind on that. How is this winter compared to others regarding the cold, snow, and potential for winter damage and stuff like that?
Well, you know, our plants would like the right amount of snow. How's that? You know, what is the right amount?
Right.
You know, it's not the winter of 96, 97 when we got 110 inches or whatever.
Stop that. I still have PTSD.
Likewise. But if we get too skimpy of a snow, I mean, I love it. But if we get too skimpy of a snow, the frost can go deeper into the ground if we get frigid temperatures.
Right.
And then also our plants perennials, some of the more tender shrubs and things just don't have that insulation. And so the right amount of snow, I kind of think most of my plants would like 18 inches to 24 inches of snow. That would be good insulation and would give some snow for the skiers and the snowmobilers and give my snowblower a little exercise.
It does.
And it would give the plants some decent insulation.
Okay. But you know what? Something to consider there is when we have heavy snows, that's when the rabbits and the deer can't go foraging and they start chewing on our homeowner vegetation.
Well, that's true. And that's why I don't like 5 feet of snow when they can get up into the apple tree and nibble everything up above.
Yeah.
But you are absolutely right, Bridget. When snow cover happens, like it usually does, all of a sudden the rabbits don't have a whole lot to eat. And boy, our rose bushes and our evergreens are really tempting, plus our fruit trees. And especially this time of year. Now, you know, there's some things appearing. I've seen rabbits even nibble the dry grass.
Yes.
You know, so that gives them a little something. This time of year especially, they are hungry after a long winter's, you know, fast, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I like to keep a watch at this time of year if they start going for some of my good stuff. Now, each year in the fall of the year, I surround just a whole lot of stuff with chicken wire or hardware cloth because
right.
that's still the best deterrent. And also this time of year, I like to keep an eye because if they've found something that they didn't find earlier, then I keep chicken wire on hand and just put chicken wire around.
I'll be honest with you. I did not open a buffet line for those rabbits. So they can go and in a lot of ways, and they're maybe not quite as nice as chicken wire. But we're going to talk about those and more. When we return, we'll have Don Kinsler stay with us. Please feel free to send us your questions. You can call us at 701-293-9000. Emails agorweather@flagfamily.com. And, of course, follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Acres TV. We'll be back after news. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We have with us Don Kinsler. Because at NDSU and across the state, horticulturally, Don is our expert. And so we were visiting that. I had a chance to chat with a gal this morning. She has planted marigolds from seed. She wants to get those to pop up in time for graduation so she can use them as decor. And the question she had was, when do I know to transplant those from the peat cups to an actual flower pot? So I gave my answer. Don said I might have even been right.
You were right. And of course, it's fun to start some of our own plants from seed indoors. And it really works well. There's just kind of a few guidelines. And if you follow those and with a little experience, it works well. I always say I'm a good test subject. If I can do it, anybody can. And so if we take a look first, okay, she started her marigolds. It's a hair on the early side, but it'll be okay. So if we take a look at when do we start these seeds indoors, it all depends on how long that type of plant takes to make a large plant. So if we look at when do we, if we kind of go forward a little bit, okay, when do we want to plant these outside in our garden or our flower beds? Okay, my 10-day sweet spot for planting is about May 15th to May 25th. I watch that 10-day period and I watch the weather, you know, what's in the forecast, what's Dean saying about frost possibilities during that time period. But that's when I start, if there's no frost kind of forecast in that area, then I start getting serious about planting things outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I'm looking at between May 15th, 25th to plant things like petunias, marigolds, tomato plants outside into the garden, then I back up to see when do I need to start those indoors because they all grow at different rate. For example, in February here, I've started our begonia seeds. They are just like dust, and they take a long time, many months, to produce a good plant by May. Tomatoes, for example, grow quickly. So April 1st is the date to start tomatoes in our area. You'll have a good plant by May 25th.
Okay.
And so you kind of look, determine, send me an email if you have wonder. If you
sure.
ever wonder when I should start some things, because I've got a calendar I can actually send you. So anyway, her marigolds started kind of now. Actually, about March 15th is the preferred date, but she'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now here's another tip. My wife and I had a garden center, greenhouse, raised you know hundreds of thousands of packs of plants each year. And so we had it for about 25 years. And so here's how the greenhouses do it. Okay, you don't direct seed into that final pack, the four-pack or six-pack. You don't direct seed into that. You seed into a seed tray.
Okay.
Give that a good warm spot. Cover it with something clear. I use, you know, the little packs of donut balls come in.
Yeah.
You know, that little clear thing?
Yeah.
I punch holes in that and use that for a little greenhouse to seed into. Okay, use seeding mix, seed into that, give it good heat. I use a germination mat.
Mm-hmm.
And then those seedlings come up beautifully in that tray. And then when you have a few leaves, like I think you suggested, Bridgetour, maybe a 3 to 5 leaves.
Yeah, about that size.
When it has 3 to 5 leaves, then you transplant those little seedlings out of their group tray and into their individual pack or pot. She started it in a peat pot and it, maybe mm-hmm. and then is going to transplant it up. That works well. And so that transplant process of transplanting the seedling out of the group seed tray and into an individual cell pack, it transfers a transplant vigor to those seedlings. You can sink it down a little deeper. The stalk becomes sturdier. And that's how the greenhouses do it, because it works. If you could direct seed into those four packs that we buy, that would save a lot of work, but it just doesn't produce as good a plant.
Okay.
So that's why greenhouses, the packs that you buy, those have been hand transplanted. Bigger operations have machines that do it now.
Sure.
So anyway, that's kind of some of the background keys as to how to produce your best transplants yourself indoors.
So if those of us at home, we've already got the tiny plants started in our little peat moss cubes, if you will, right? And we're ready to transplant them to the pot. Should we keep them in that little peat moss container, or should we ditch that? I know you're supposed to be able to plant it, but I feel like that always binds up the root system too much.
Boy, you got it, Bridget. Because oftentimes those peat, whether it's the little peat pellet that kind of expands when
right.
you wet it,
yep.
okay, they look like kind of a little brown cookie, and then you wet them, then they expand kind of neatly, or a peat pot that you've put mix into. Now, you are right in that the roots don't always penetrate out of that covering or kind of the netting around that little peat cookie. And so what works very well when you transplant it up or transplant those out in the garden is to break up that outer covering. Also, make sure if it's an actual peat pot, break down the upper rim. We don't want that rim up at or above soil level because that will wick moisture up out of the root system. So you are right. You need to break up that outer peat covering a little bit so the roots can penetrate better.
Now, Don, I am going to be re-landscaping my front right along the house in the front. I tore down two huge, tall evergreen trees last year. So I want to re-landscape that whole front. I want to give it curb appeal, something to pop. What would you suggest, hostas or what? I could love to get one of these red, white, and blue hostas to put out there. That would pop. But
that would be
eye-catching. You spent a lot of time planting leaves out there,
right? Exactly. What would you suggest to make that pop for anybody that's doing landscaping in front of their house? They want that to pop and give it curb appeal.
Now, the first thing that comes to mind when you mentioned removing old established evergreens is all of a sudden the light dynamic has changed.
Sure.
What maybe was a shaded or semi-shaded area now might be full sun.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is full sun, then, of course, at the garden centers, we look for shrubs that love full sun. So we're not looking at the hosta and bleeding heart and some of the shrubs that do well in hydrangeas that maybe like shade. We're not looking at those as much as we are full sun type shrubs.
Okay.
So the local garden centers are full of things that will do well. And so there's all kinds of things. You might look to see, would you like a flowering type shrub? There are wonderful things like potentillas. Nine barks do beautifully.
Okay.
Aronia. Aronia makes a wonderful landscape shrub. Plus,
and
you'll
can
have
make muffins.
Yeah, I was
berries.
Just thinking the same thing.
I won't need to bring in the muffins.
Right.
You can grow your own muffins. And the other thing that comes to my mind too is it's a mistake we all make, and I've made this mistake, and it's planting everything too close to the house foundation because those shrubs look so cute when they're small. And all of a sudden, you know, 30 years later, you're wondering, why did I plant this stuff? It looks so packed up against the house foundation.
You don't even need 30 years. I have a 9 bark that I did that with. I planted it not far enough away from the house. And now when the wind blows and the branches rub up against the siding, ooh, and I'm laying in bed at night going, what is that? Oh, it's a plant out there.
Yeah, so one way to kind of determine, okay, am I giving these enough space is to the tag on each type of shrub will indicate its eventual width.
Right.
For example, if a dogwood is going to get 5 feet wide, mm-hmm, then picture that as a footprint. And so when you're planting these and kind of setting them out to how you would like them to go, make sure that that dogwood, if it says grows to 5 feet, make sure it has that 5 foot footprint until it will touch the next thing. And usually, and when I last did our landscape, I went out twice as far as I thought I maybe should, and I'm glad. I don't know if I went out far enough away from the foundation yet, but really size that up. I've never heard, you know, 20 years later, I've never heard anybody say, man, I went too far out from the house foundation when I did this. Usually it's the other way. It's like, oh, shoot, why didn't I put the edging and everything farther out?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's even the case in the garden with your tomato plants.
Well, that's true.
They're so cute. I'll put them nice and close together, and then by harvest.
And then you're trying to weave your way through at harvest time without getting an angle, an ankle wrapped up in a tomato.
I've also learned the hard way why your tomato plants should not be that close to your grapevines, because there's a battle to be had. That happens. Also, I heard you say earlier when starting some of those plants, you're using plastic containers like the ones that donut holes come in. Gonna need a lot more donuts in my life in order to be able to transplant.
Well, I'm lucky because I've loved donut holes, and that is actually that's actually one of the most creative. It's just like a little miniature greenhouse works so well. And also another tip for starting seeds is, if you're going to start multiple types, start each type in its own little container. For example, peppers are going to come up at a different rate than tomatoes. Well, tomatoes will come up faster. And if they're all in the same thing, well, then you don't know how to handle it, because when they germinate, you should get them off of the heat pad. Mm-hmm. And we discussed putting a fan on.
Yes.
A fan. Get some air moving on those. Doesn't have to be constant. But get some air moving. It helps make the stem sturdier and cuts down seedling disease. If you're growing these under lights, which I do in our basement, a common question is, how many hours on for the lights and how many hours off? The way I remember it is, humans, we're supposed to get 8 hours of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give plants the same thing.
Sure.
So 8 hours of dark, 16 hours on with the lights.
Okay. That makes sense to give them the same amount that you're doing right there. And really, when we're talking about getting those tiny seeds to pop up and come out of the ground, it's no different than what we're doing in a field situation. There's a reason that we are trying to plant with uniformity, and we really want to make sure that all of our corn seeds are level, because you can have up to a 20% yield loss if you have variability in different depths. So
yep, very
that makes
true.
Sense.
Another common question in starting seeds is, how in your little seed tray, how deep do I plant them? What I like to do is, if it's a very tiny seed, about the size of a poppy seed, and petunia seed are about that small, and so when you distribute them over the seed tray, the mix, if you can no longer see the seed, then don't cover it.
Okay.
When you water them, it'll find its way down in, and they can't emerge through much soil.
Sure.
But if after you seed them, sprinkle the seed over the mix, if you can see those seed, then cover it with enough mix so you can no longer see them. Like your marigold seed, you can see those, so you need to cover it with some mix.
And I'm laughing because I'm one of those people that has a heavy hand at planting, and then I have to spend a lot of time thinning things out. I'm sorry, carrots. This is them talking about you.
You know, because it's interesting, the final spacing on a carrot needs to be about 1 inch. You know, if you picture a decent sized carrot going down in, it needs, you know,
yeah,
carrot needs to have about an inch of space.
Would,
but boy, isn't it hard to get them spaced, because that seed is like
hard. It's so small.
Never have the wind blow the seed out of your hand.
Completely.
As you're trying to seed in the wind with
which
that fine a seed
also explains the deformity in my final carrot product, because they're a little tight in the ground. Oopsie.
So that our last freeze, according to the LRC.
Yes, you perked up my ears when you were talking last freeze, last frost.
So the last freeze, according to our LRC model, which has been pretty darn accurate, we've got a hard freeze coming April 15th, 16th. Then we warm things up above freezing for about the 17th through the 19th.
So the nights are above freezing.
Correct. Those, yeah. Yep. Now, it looks like the last freeze potential is right around April 20th, where temperatures will get down to about 29 or 30.
Any indication for May what the lows are? You see, I don't trust spring.
Right. So mid-May, so we're looking at about the 12th through the 16th. We will have lows between 33 and 36. So, but the last hard freeze looks to be right around April 20th. But then we're at that frost potential all the way through about May 14th, right around there.
Oh, that's interesting. That's fascinating because, of course, that's what we all watch, you know, because our tomatoes and sensitive things, boy, when it is at 32 degrees, they can really be killed because they're tropical. You know, it's fascinating. Fargo has had frost every month of the year except July. Mm-hmm. And I think in 1969, it was June 20th, something like that. And, of course, August frost.
We've had August,
We've had August frost. So, but July, we're fine.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
You say that, but it happens.
I'm looking so forward to this upcoming growing season.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty decent spring. I know that I was talking with Gary, who founded the LRC, and I know a lot of farmers and even just gardeners are worried about, are we going to go into another, are we going into a drought this year? Droughts either contract or expand. And typically with a La Nina season, we go into more of a drought mode. Well, the good news is we are getting totally out of La Nina. That has already dissipated, and we're actually seeing the ocean temperatures start to warm. Typically, for the northern and central plains, that means wetter conditions that are usually found out to our east start to back up to the west. So we're really not worried about drought conditions this year across our area. Now, there will be pockets of it, and one pocket, unfortunately, is going to be out in the western part of the state. But for the Red River Valley, it looks good.
I'd love a gardening season in which you get an inch of rain every 7 to 10 days. Can you do that?
Sign me up.
Us?
Oh, everybody who
I'm
runs
not sure
their
we can pull that off, but
all the sprinkler systems in town just went hooray!
Right.
Let's do that.
We'll see what we can do. We'll
work super.
On it. One of us has to lug a lot of water and a lot of watering cans, et cetera. So.
Yeah, I don't have a sprinkling system, so I have to drag hose out to the different flower beds in the vegetable garden, and you know I do lay it in place along the edge. But yeah, a sprinkler system would probably be nice.
You are looking at the Riedel Ranch sprinkler system right here. I'm the one.
You know, a question for you: how come the hose, when you're stretching it, you know, 200 feet, how come it always kinks back at the spigot and not within easy reach?
Murphy's Law. It's horrendous.
It wants you to have exercise to go back to the spigot.
Also, when you get out there and you think that the sprayer nozzle is going to work, it does not.
Well, that's good for another trip back to the garage.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And at that point, your garage keeps moving further and further away from you. So, Don, thank you very much.
Gosh, it's always great to be with you. And thanks
so
everyone.
Much, Don.
Thanks everyone for listening.
You bet.
Every time, and you always have great things to share. We don't necessarily get a lot of calls with you. It must just because you have... You're saying exactly the things people want to know. It's great. Thank you.
Well, you know, as I always like to say, we're all in it together, so I really enjoy visiting.
And Don, if anybody has any questions for you, what's the
easiest
way to get
an email. Actually, the emails haven't slowed down this winter. People are thinking, which is great. Donald.Kinzler, spelled K-I-N-Z-L-E-R, at ndsu.edu.
Perfect. Don, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Great to be here.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll... have a final cap of weather, and if we have any time, Bridget will go over a few ag topics as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. It's 157, and temperatures outside right around the 40-degree mark. Much cooler, though, in the Northern Valley. And we should tick it up a few more degrees. Central Southern Valley should make it into the mid-40s today. Not bad. We'll continue that snow melt and start to thaw everything out, and another mild day tomorrow in the mid-40s, and then Wednesday or Friday, I should say, that's when the bottom falls out. Cold front slams through the area. We'll have a morning high in the mid-40s. to some spots upper 30s, and then sharply falling temperatures in the afternoon. North winds on Friday. Friday's just going to feel like it's going to feel like we're back to winter. We'll have winds gusting at or over 40 miles an hour Friday out of the north. So it is going to be a chilly day on Friday. Sub-zero wind chills Friday night. And then as we head into the weekend, a cool Saturday in the 20s, warming up into the 40s on Sunday. And then Monday, we're still in the mid to upper 40s. But the rest of next week, we'll return temperatures back into the 30s for much of next week. I don't see a return to this this abnormally warm weather for a while, as we're going to start getting into the stormy part of the LRC cycle after the 10th of the month. I think we'll see a few smaller systems before that, but yeah, we'll have the new LRC calendar up on our website by Monday, working on that right now, and that will go all the way through May. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.